Well, in case anyone is wondering, there are 56 days until Christmas, but probably only a few days till radio stations start playing Christmas music, right? One thing that I will predict for your Christmas, I don't know what all it will hold, but one thing I'll predict is that some of us, many of us, will likely get gifts that we didn't particularly want. Whether that's from someone who thought they found something we might like, and we just don't like it, and that always happens. Or we also, of course, many of us have those well-meaning relatives who seem very good at getting the gifts that they want to give more than the gifts that you want to receive. Or maybe you'll have the white elephant exchange kind of experience. And of course, the whole point of the white elephant gift is that's the gifts that nobody wants. What I discovered this week is that if you are doing a white elephant gift exchange, they actually have year-by-year suggestions for you on items that you could take. So on the 2022 list of white elephant gift options, you will find things like bandages that look like pickles, lightsaber chopsticks, and a little desktop boxing set with finger punching bags. Now, some of these gifts, people might want. You might say, I really would like an avocado tree growing kit. You might say that. But this morning I want to talk for a few minutes about a gift that, when it comes down to it, I think nobody wants. As Sue already alluded to this morning, we've been in this tough love series. We all know and believe in the importance of love. And we all know and recognize that there are aspects of love that are hard, that are hard for us to put into practice, that are hard for us to live out, that are hard for us to experience. And so we're trying to talk through this series about some of those. So we've talked about how we love across the differences that we have. We've talked about what do you do if you have to confront someone about something? What do you do when you've been wronged and you're trying to forgive someone for something that they've done to you? All of these are aspects of tough love. And today I want to talk about kind of the opposite of the confrontation issue, and that is what do you do when someone comes and confronts you? What do you do when someone criticizes you? What do you do when it seems like someone is opposed to you? What do we do with those kinds of situations when we're the one that's being put on the spot by the other person? Well, though nobody really wants to be the recipient of a criticism or a confrontation, I'd like to suggest to you that those things could actually sometimes be gifts to us. Yes, maybe like a white elephant gift, maybe the gift that nobody wants, but a gift. And we can find some scriptural evidence for that, and let me point a few of them out to you. So in Proverbs chapter 27, we find this wisdom nugget: better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. So the perspective of the proverb writer there is when we face opposition, when we're criticized, when there is confrontation, it can hurt for sure. But, it's far better to face that criticism than it is if someone loves you, but they never show it. They never say it. In fact, this kind of confrontation, this kind of opposition can actually be good for us, especially if it comes from someone who cares. If it comes from a friend, even if they have to wound us, rather that than kisses from enemies. We could categorize the kind of pain that we sometimes experience when we're confronted. We could categorize that as suffering. So while the scripture writers may not say a lot about confrontation, they certainly say a lot about suffering. And we find these words from Paul in Romans chapter 5. He's celebrating that we can be made right with God, that we can have peace with God, that God pours out amazing grace on us. And in Romans 5, he celebrates that. And in chapter 2, toward the end, he says, "And we boast in the hope of the glory of God." God's radiant presence and power in our lives gives us hope. And then he says this interesting thing: not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings. Now, that's an odd place to go, isn't it? When he's talking about the good stuff, he says we can glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who's been given to us. So we're not going to delve into the details of those verses, but the point is, out of hard things, out of suffering, can come good things. And so certainly when we talk about criticism and confrontation and opposition, that possibility exists there as well, that good can come from it. So here's kind of the big idea for you this morning. Opposition equals opportunity. Opposition equals opportunity. There is possibly a gift in opposition if we will receive it, if we will take it. Author John Ortberg says this: "I have gained an appreciation for the gift of opposition. When it comes, I learn something about my motives. When it comes, I get to test my courage. When it comes, the truth about my humility or lack thereof is revealed. When it comes, blind spots get exposed that would otherwise do damage. When it comes, I am given the opportunity to grow strong. When it comes, I discover that I am the opposition in more lives than I ever would have guessed." There are gifts that come. We learn things when we face opposition. Now, the old TV talk show host, Dick Cavett, says it's a rare person who wants to hear what he doesn't want to hear. I'd like to suggest that we try to be those rare people that want to hear what we don't want to hear because of the potential gift that is there. And so the question that I want to walk us through is if we accept the premise, even if you don't, I hope you'll go along with me here. If we accept the premise that opposition can be a gift, that it can be an opportunity, then the question becomes, how do we make the most of that opportunity? And so I'm going to jump around through some scriptures and offer you a few perspectives on that. First, let me take you to the words of James. We've heard Paul's words on suffering. James, the brother of Jesus, also has some words for us on hard times, on trials that Christians face. He says, "My dear brothers and sisters," this is James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." So how do we seize the opportunity that opposition affords us? Well, if we take the words of James seriously, then certainly one starting point would be for us to listen without offense. If we're going to seize the opportunity that opposition brings us, we listen without offense. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry, James writes. Now, these are days, maybe you've noticed, when it seems like it's much easier to do the opposite of what those verses say, kind of do them in reverse. So we are quick to get angry or offended, and then, you know, pretty quick to speak out of that place of anger and offense, and slow to listen. Pastor Albert Tate makes this interesting observation that we have made an idol out of offense in these days. You know, well, I don't deserve this. I shouldn't be spoken to that way. I shouldn't have to listen to this. If someone disagrees or criticizes us, we can get offended. And then, you know, boycott, cancel. Tate gives this interesting comparison. He says, you know, if a person works out, if they're exercising, if they're lifting weights, they're not surprised if they're a little sore the next day. So I've heard. You're not surprised if you're sore. Now, the temptation might be to stop working out because, I mean, that hurts. Who wants to feel that way? But you recognize when you do it that the muscles are getting stretched and they're getting built as a result of being offended. Really? The offense is actually giving strength to the muscles. So on the other side of the soreness, there is strength. And so Tate suggests we need to learn how to be sore and recover rather than just stopping or walking away. In fact, you know, the sorest muscles may just be the most underdeveloped. So when the muscles get extra sore, that means rather than, you know, giving up on them, maybe you need to keep working them and even work them a little harder at times. So if there is an issue that you don't want to face, if there's that topic that you don't want to talk about, if there's that criticism that you don't want to hear, that just offends you when it comes, maybe that means that that muscle is a little underdeveloped. And so you actually need it to be a little more sore so that you can strengthen it. Listen without offense. Now you might say, well, but I can't help it if it offends me. But let me suggest to you, we have choices, even when it comes to taking offense at something. Martin Luther King Jr., who led the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s in our country, his advice for those who were with him in the struggle is really telling in this regard. You know, he recognized that there was a lot of potential for those who were marching with him, who were protesting with him, who were working with him for causes of justice, that there was a lot of potential for them to be offended by others, to be hurt by others, to be even killed. But he, in his famous I Have a Dream speech, he said, "Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must ever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force." We have choices when we're faced with difficult things. Now, we could get offended first, and we could ask questions later. And that's often what happens, is we get offended and then we stop listening. Can I suggest that we use the kind of dignity and discipline that King talks about to hold back our offense and listen first? If we're going to seize the opportunity that opposition and confrontation and criticism provide, that's a great starting point. Listen without offense. And that really leads to the second one, and that is learn before reacting. That's really why we listen, so we can learn. What if, Pastor John talked about this in his sermon last week, what if we put a higher value in our adulthood, as we're getting there or are already there, what if we put a higher priority on staying curious, on asking questions? What if before, you know, when someone is criticizing us, what if before we push back, before we get defensive, before we, you know, stop listening so we can think of our comeback, what if we ask questions? And what if we make it our priority to understand and be sure that we understand exactly what they're saying before we respond? I love the words of that prayer that's attributed to Saint Francis. This is part of it. He prays, "O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love." What if we made it our priority to console others, to understand others, to love others, before we expect to receive the same in kind? Now, maybe that sounds hard. Maybe that sounds impossible. But you know, other Christians have managed it over time. John Wesley was a church father from 1700s, and he's known as the father of the Methodist Church, and he put together these little communities of people with the idea that we need to be in small communities where we can be held accountable for our deepest values and our most important decisions. He called it watching over one another in love. We need to be in these communities where that can happen. But here's the interesting thing. For John Wesley, when someone wanted to be in one of his communities where this kind of thing could happen, he would ask a series of questions. Here are just a few of the questions that he would ask of someone who was interested in one of the communities to be sure that they were serious about it and that they knew what they were getting into. So he would ask these questions. Does any sin, inward or outward, have dominion over you? Do you desire to be told of your faults? Do you desire to be told of all of your faults, plain and clear? Do you desire that we should tell you whatever we think or fear or hear about you? And do you desire that in doing this we should come as close as possible, cut to the quick, and search your heart to the bottom? Doesn't that sound like a fun community to be part of? Well, people joined those communities by the thousands. Maybe because they recognized that they could not grow into the people that they wanted to be without some outside help. When you're confronted, when you're criticized, listen and learn. Be the student. You know, even if you think that the criticism you're hearing, even if you think it's unwarranted, even if you think you're not sure that you can trust the source, even if you think what they're saying is not helpful, even if you think what they're saying is, you know, 95% inaccurate, maybe in the 5% that's left, there is a nugget of truth that you need to hear, that I need to hear, that we can act on. You know, this is good advice for interpersonal relationships. It's also good advice just for handling workplace relationships. And it's good advice for church relationships as well. You might be surprised to know that people in church sometimes have opinions. Is that a surprise? Opinions about decisions that are made or programs or even people in the church. And in the remote case that something like that would happen here, that someone had an opinion, I hope that you'll take other messages to heart in how you communicate those opinions. But I want to say that, at least for me as a pastor, and I think I speak for others on staff and our leadership here, we want to take the feedback that we hear, even when it's criticism, even when it's confrontation, even when it feels like opposition, we want to take it seriously. We want to listen and we want to learn before responding. And even if I disagree with a comment or a suggestion, you know, I'm still listening for, you know, is there a nugget there? Is there a nugget there that I can and should act on? As followers of Jesus, we are called to that kind of posture of humility throughout our lives. I'm challenged by the words of Paul. He was writing to Christians in the city of Corinth in the first century and talking about the challenges of ministry. And he says this, "To this very hour, we go hungry and thirsty. We are in rags. We are brutally treated. We are homeless. We work hard with our own hands. When we are cursed, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are slandered, we answer kindly. We have become the scum of the earth, the garbage of the world, right up to this moment." And then a few verses later, he says, "Therefore, I urge you to imitate me." Well, doesn't that sound appealing? And yet, that's the kind of posture that Christians are called to. One that listens and learns before getting offended and reacting. One that blesses over cursing. One that answers kindly. That's the kind of posture that we are called to. And so, listen and learn when you're confronted. And lastly, let's live as God's secure children. Live as God's secure children. Henry Nouwen comments on dealing with criticism. This is an interesting observation. He's talking specifically about criticism. He says, "At issue here is the question, to whom do I belong? To God or the world? Because if I belong to God, if I'm secure in an identity as his child, that's going to affect how I respond to criticism. If I'm secure as God's child, then there is no opposition, there is no criticism, there is no confrontation that can ultimately threaten me. And so I can receive it, I can listen to it, I can learn from it." You know, just before those verses where Paul talks about the hardships of ministry, he says this, 1 Corinthians 4. He says, "It's required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful." And then as he's thinking about what it means to be faithful to the trust he's given, he says, "I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me." He could handle criticism because God was the ultimate judge. Because God was the ultimate vindication. Because God's opinion was the one that mattered most to him. And so we end up in this interesting spot when we're confronted, when we're criticized, where we want to listen, we want to learn, we want to take it. And yet, we don't want to take it the wrong way. Pastor Wayne Cordero says the challenge is to stay balanced when criticized, to avoid taking the criticism personally, yet to avoid becoming calloused or cynical. We are called to a paradox of personalities, he says. Sensitive but not easily offended, empathetic but not weak, flexible and yet filled with convictions. How do we strike that balance? Might be difficult, but I'd argue that it is possible when we are God's children, when we are his secure children. Those verses from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount that Nolan read for us earlier says, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven." We are never more children of our Father in heaven, never demonstrating it better than when we respond to those who feel like enemies with love. Nobody wants opposition or criticism or confrontation. Most of us don't want to give them or receive them. But they might be the white elephant gift that we need. They might help us to see something that we couldn't see before. They might motivate us to change when we didn't think it was necessary or possible. I'd like to invite you to go with me to Jesus now and ask him for his help to see opposition as an opportunity. Would you pray with me? Jesus, our eyes don't naturally see hardships that we face as a gift. We don't naturally see opposition as an opportunity. And so I would ask, Lord, for us to have new eyes, to see it differently. And I would ask, Jesus, that by your Spirit working within us, we would have new hearts that can take the disciplined path of holding back offense so that we can listen. That would prioritize learning before we react. That would feel so secure in our identity as your loved children that ultimately nothing threatens us. And it's going to take your work in us to make that possible, Jesus, and so we ask for it. God, we ask you to show us your goodness in whatever forms it comes. May we be open and willing to receive it. I ask it in your name, Jesus. Amen.